Budget and Audit Committee, Gary Bobby.
Thank you, Chair West. I would ask Susan Howarth if she would join us, please. With permission, I'm going to jump back and forth a little bit for continuity's sake between action items and information items. But first, we will take the action item one, the acceptance of the audit report and financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2025.
So I'll just take this opportunity to introduce our external auditor, Jennifer, with Orvis, and we can take change places and I'll get you started here. I'll have Bud come up here and you want to come back? So there you go.
Thank you, Board of Regents. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I am Jennifer Williams, a partner with Forbes Mazars, the external audit firm that provides the annual audit results. And I have Cameron Whitehouse with me as well. She is a team member here that helps with the audit process. So, now let's see if I can use this.
One on the side there.
There we go. Okay, perfect. All right. So, again, so the agenda for today is audit results, a few financial statement highlights, as well as our required communication to you up today, the Board of Regents letter, then any questions you might have on the audit report. So we, for the audit results, we did accomplish the audit plan and meet the reporting deadline. And so that reporting deadline to the state is October 3rd. So I really want to thank Susan and the team there. They work really hard, very passionate about the financial statements, provide us that information so that we are able to be on site and go through that process. We did issue an unmodified or clean opinion on the financial statements, which is what you would expect and you have received in the past. The financial statements are in a single year presentation, and this is due to the adoption of GASB 101. That is related to compensated absences. The way GASB has their guidance, you have to present it as the earliest period presented. And so in this situation, most universities and other institutions will do a single year presentation, so you adopt that standard as of July 1st, 2024. So again, a lot of accounting lingo there that I won't go into a lot of details for you. We did not have any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses noted in internal controls over financial reporting. As I mentioned, there was the new standard that was required to be adopted, and management provided that information to us. One other item to note is that we provide the financial statement audit, but we also provide the compliance or single audit, as we call it, when we look at your federal awards. Due to the government, the compliance supplement has not been issued, and so we are unable to issue anyone's financial statements because of, the uniform guidance part of the financial statements, because that compliance supplement dictates the procedures that we are required to follow. So that is something that we talked with the chair about, and management noted that, and that's just we are pending the release of that. And so we have not performed all of the single audit requirements to this point yet. So a few financial highlights that are included in the audit report for you. So I just highlighted here net tuition. There was a slight decrease, about 2%. Again, most of the numbers from a comparable standpoint are very comparable to the prior year. Besides the new standard, there wasn't a significant change in the presentation of the financial statements. Here you'll see the net position that did change about $69 million, increased 40%. The GASB 101, the compensated impact, was a negative $6 million. So that impact of that was the rules that are required of what you have to accrue on your financial statements for vacation and sick leave. The sick leave is the piece that was not prior recorded, again, and that was proper under the standards. And then 101 looked at that and said, what is more likely than not to be used and paid? And so based on the terminology, that was what was included. So again, management had been properly recognizing the sick leave, those no changes happened in your policy. It was just a change in the GASB guidance and what was required to be reported. The state appropriations, there was an increase about 7%. So you'll see that went up from $83 million to $89 million received during the year. Here is just some highlights of the statements of net position. Give you some high-level notes there for those. Again, no significant changes. You'll see the assets held in trust, about $4 million. That's primarily your change in the return on investments. Investment portfolio is still doing well, so you'll see that. The largest change is the capital assets, as you all are well aware of the projects that are being completed on campus with the Fieldhouse, College of Business, I believe, are the primary ones with some construction in process. So about $74 million increase there. The deferred outflows and items related to pension and OPEB liability, that's the post-employment, you'll see fluctuations there. That is just changes in assumptions in the actuary reports. So those are continue to decrease from the prior years, and so those are just items that are required to be reported on the financial statements, but are seeing a decrease currently. PeerGuest gives you some highlights of the statements of revenues and expenses. Again, the federal and state contracts, those funding has increased as well. So that was about $86 million in the current year. And then total operating revenues just saw a slight increase. And then your operating expenses had about a 6% increase. Again, a lot, it mainly due to inflation, not a significant change in the revenue or expenses at the university. Here are just some footnote highlights for you. Again, I talked about the GASB 101, and so that is noted. The deposits and investments, there's a little bit less footnotes in there with the shift back to limited investments held at the university. And then note 19 and 20 in the financial statements do provide information for your component units, the Student Life Foundation, as well as the College Heights Foundation. Any questions on the financial statements or items that I discussed before I go into the Board of Regents letter?
I'd like to make one comment. One of the things you'll note is it looks like there's a decrease in net tuition. But GASB 101 includes state and federal aid, which makes it look like there's a decline. When we talk about net tuition, we exclude those things as an institution, which is why it goes up. I just want to make that clear, because as we talk about gains in net tuition revenue, GASB makes it look like it goes down.
And we're reporting just like all institutions do. And there's kind of this debate amongst institutions and GASB that we would like to get this, how we report and how GASB reports aligned, but we haven't been successful yet. So.
Yes. GASB has been very active recently. I think each board meeting I have said that there's a new GASB standard that you had to adopt, and there's going to be another one next year as well. So I'll work with the team and management on that one as well. Any other comments or questions? Okay, so this is the Board of Regents letter, our required communication to you all. So this slide just notes the our responsibilities that we are required to follow during our audit process, and that we are required to follow government auditing standards. The significant accounting policies, those are described in note one of the audited financial statements. As I've already spoke about, there was the adoption of 101, and we noted no unusual or alternative accounting treatments in our audit process. The management judgments and accounting estimates, these are just estimates that are an integral part of your financial statements, and so we pay particular attention to those during the audit process. We did not have any issues or concerns with these items, but you can see here the list of those items that have estimates. So your depreciation on your capital assets, along with the benefit defined benefit pension plan and the other post-employment benefit plan assumptions. Again, those are included in the actuary reports that are provided. And then there are some items related to discount rate, contract terms, in regards to leases that are required to be reported on the financial. Finally, we did have one audit adjustment that was proposed, and this was reclassification in regards to net asset, net position balances. And so we did have a reclassification between the net investment and capital assets and unrestricted. Still within the net position, there are just categories in how items need to be reported. So we had adjustment that management had agreed and recorded. And then we had no uncorrected misstatements, so no items that we found that were what we deem immaterial that do not need to be recorded. So none of those to go over with you today. So again, I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to take any other questions on the prepared materials.
Any questions of Jennifer or comments?
So last year, comparing one report to another, there was a concern, it didn't quite rise to the level of concern about staffing in that area, and this year it's not there, so in your estimation, it is better.
Correct, yes. Management is looking at that with the roles that people have and have hired various positions. Again, we look at all cycles between accounts payable, payroll, and so we did not have any recommendations this year.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept the auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2025.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Regent Spiller, second by Regent Hill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Now we'll go to the first information item.
Yeah, so before we leave the audit, I know it's not a glamorous presentation by any means, and there's so much work that goes on in this, and so I really have to thank Rinaldo, Amy Hunter, our controller, which I think is here, and all the folks in the accounting office and university-wide that go into this, because it's a lot of work and they do a tremendous job. I mean, to get a clean audit with no findings is remarkable. So,
as an auditor in a prior life, I can definitely agree with that, both on the accounting side and the auditor side. So I appreciate it on both. The first information item we have is the 24-25 fourth quarter statement of revenues and expenditures.
Yeah, so I talked to Chair Brody, and we thought that the cadence of this flowed a little better rather than talking about this towards the end of the agenda. So we want to share with the board the fourth quarter statements of revenues and expenditures. So that was the quarter that ended June 30th. So this, I think, is very telling of the work that the campus has done over the past 3 years. So you'll see that in fiscal year 22, we ended with a budget versus actual, a surplus of about $4.7 million. And then that year that we all remember that we're not too happy with was fiscal year 23, where we ended with a $11.5 million deficit. So it's really important to note the work that the campus has done over the past 3 years. To last year, we ended with approximately $4 million deficit. And then this past year, we ended basically balanced out of the $29,000 surplus. We won't spend all in one place. But for our overall, we ended up at a balance. And that's tremendous work because if you remember right, our budget realignment plan was a two-year plan. So in fiscal year 25, we still had a little bit of work to do on the budget, so we still had about $7 million to clear up. And in fiscal year 26, we did that. So this is tremendous work for the campus. So I want to thank the deans, the vice president, our president, the provost, everything that everyone has done to not only clean up the budget as far as getting it structurally imbalanced, but also basically break even work in the fiscal year 25.
And no use of carry forward to paper over a deficit. Is that correct?
That's correct. So just a little bit, I won't go into detail, a lot of detail for fiscal year 25 budget versus actual, but on the revenue, so you'll see again an improvement of $5.2 million in our net tuition revenue, primarily due to some strategic improvements in our scholarship model. And I got a note again that what's really important about looking at net tuition revenue rather than enrollment is that you can have an increase in enrollment and it financially hurts you. So looking at net tuition revenue is looking at both your enrollment, your gross tuition, as well as your financial aid strategies. So an improvement of $5.2 million is extremely incredible work for both our enrollment team and the provost office. Second, our state appropriation was an increase of 4.5 increase in base funding, as well as a 2.2 subsidy for property insurance. So I have to thank both our president and Jennifer Smith for the work they do in Frankfort in getting those appropriations for us. Grants and contracts, that's another good news story from the prior year. Not only was there a significant increase in Pell and CAP grants from the government, what's really, really good news for our campus is as we strive towards an R2 status, we saw a nice increase of almost 5% in our extramurally funded research grants. So great work to the provost, the deans, and our faculty on that. So on the expense side, note that our personnel turned down slightly in employee FTE and student employment headcount. Most of the employee FTE had to do with the visa that we offered early on in the year. Oh, see, bud, I need you.
Sure.
And so other financial assistance, again, that's that large increase in the federal Pell and state CAP grants. Okay. So that's all I have on the fourth quarter.
Any questions of Susan on the fourth quarter? If not, we'll move on to action item two, the approval of the statement of 25-26 first quarter statement of revenues and expenses.
Okay, so you know, we've talked a lot about getting the carry forward cleaned up out of the budget and getting it back into structural balance. And I think from doing that, you're going to see the improvement in our financial position and what that does for us as we look into the first quarter of fiscal year 26. So you'll see just in the first quarter, we've seen an improvement of $3.5 million from the prior year. So when Ronaldo and his staff look at financial forecasting, just looking at the first quarter, and I know we don't have a lot in to do a financial forecast, but just based on the first quarter and forecasting towards the end of the year, we're looking at ending the year anywhere between $4 and $7 million to the good. So that's great news for our university. So looking at total revenues, up about close to $4 million from the prior year. That's as when you compare it to budget, because we also have made adjustments in our budget, we're basically flatlined as far as a percent to budget. Drilling down a bit again into net tuition revenue. So remember last year we saw an improvement of about $5 million. Again this year in the first quarter, we're seeing another nice increase in net tuition revenue of about $4.5 million. Again, primarily because of the adjustments to our financial aid model. Looking at the other categories, the non-tuition revenue, unlike last year, our grants and contracts are trending lower this year. A lot of that is being because of the decline in Pell eligible student enrollment. Unfortunately, some of the changes, the federal legislation, we've just not been able to recruit some of those students that we did in the past. And there is, unfortunately, in the first quarter, a 9% decrease in extramurally funded research grants. Now, I will note, but may want to say something along those lines, that's not just us, that's a national trend with all the federal things that are going on right now. Bud, do you have any?
Just that the hope is that as we move forward and we continue to talk about innovation and as a country and as a thing, as a group, we hope that they will start to, and there's discussions about refunding NIH, NSF, and those types of areas.
Other revenue is again slightly higher. When they dissolved the research foundation, there was some money or some cash transferred into the university because of that dissolving of that foundation. On the expense side, basically flat, slight increase of $370,000, which is basically immaterial to the size of our budget. And again, as a percent of budget, basically flatlined. drilling down into the expenses, again, we're seeing a decline in wages and salaries, and that's because of the decrease in the FTE, driven again by the VSIP. Insurance is, health insurance is driving the increase in our fringe benefits. No surprise here. I think everybody across the country is seeing that. Operating expenses, again, as we saw on the revenue side, you'll see a like decline on the expense side, primarily driven by that decline in the Pell eligible students. Supplies and expense, that's down nicely over this time last year, about $1 million. Debt service, seeing an increase because of the debt that was issued to complete Chandler Hall and the Ford Fieldhouse. And that's all I have on that.
Okay. Next year at this time, we'll remind you of that 4-7.
I got it.
Any questions to Susan on the first quarter?
Yeah, Ms. Susan, you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, but on FY25, the fourth quarter, the one you presented just before this, student employment was slightly down, as well as FTE. Do you expect that to continue to go down into 26, or do you think it will remain steady? Do you think it will go slightly up?
It's up
slightly.
Yeah. Student employment is up this year.
What do you attribute this to?
I think there's a little bit of headcount increase, but there's also an increase in the hourly rates on average. Mm-hmm. So I think to recruit additional students, we've kind of had to be competitive, right, with the industry. A bit above.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I think I asked you this yesterday, Susan, about the Pell eligible. So the decline in Pell eligible students, is it harder to be Pell eligible? Fewer that are applying to be Pell eligible?
So if you think about HB4, we were disallowed from using Cornelius Martin scholarship to recruit certain demographics. Okay. And so those demographic groups, both first gen and students of color, year over year down.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept for filing the statement of revenues and expenditures for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2025 and 24.
So moved.
Motion by Reason Dennison, second by Reason Spiller. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we're back to the information item of the 2025-26 first quarter financial statements. Susan.
So just as a reminder, we now develop quarterly financial statements, and just as a reminder, they are unaudited. So our auditors only look at the end of the year statements. So these are prepared by our accounting office, and but it gives you a little bit more information into our financial position. So not going to go into a lot on these, but these are our balance sheet highlights. We see a nice increase in our net position of around $71 million, another increase in our unrestricted net position. A lot of people think of, accounting folks think of unrestricted net position of being more telling, and we see an increase in that of $15 million. The good news, and back to getting your budget back into structurally balanced, we're seeing an increase in our cash and cash equivalents of about $12 million. Now, some of that, for transparency, has to do with some of our restricted cash associated with some of our capital construction. Income statement highlights. You're seeing the year-over-year change. So, again, in comparison to the prior year, we're seeing a nice increase in net position year-over-year. Operating revenue is up about $6 million. Again, most of that is directly related to the increase in net tuition revenue of about $4 million. Operating expenses are down by about $7 million. Some of that is timing with accounting entries from something that happened last year at this time may have not happened, and so on and so forth. So your non-operating revenues have declined about $11 million. Some of that is the decline from capital appropriations of about $9 million. And then the grants and contracts decline of about $1.8
million. Okay. Any questions to Susan on first quarter internal prepared statements? If not, then we'll We're back up to action item three, the approval of personnel actions.
So I guess it was probably about a year ago that we made some changes to these personnel actions to kind of tighten them up and not present the board with so many details on the personnel actions and the one-time payments. So these are the standard ones that we bring to the board. And so a lot of material that came to you, I'm happy to answer any questions. That's all I have.
Any questions or comments on personnel actions? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the faculty and staff personnel actions and one-time payments.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Dennison.
Second.
Second by Regent Spiller. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Move to the approval of asset preservation pool and capital projects.
So just a reminder to the board, we are required by the state to receive Board of Regents authority before we can draw any money down from the asset preservation pool. And so these projects, we're just asking for your approval as to whether we can actually tap into asset preservation. We still have to, there's still lots of projects in the queue, so some of them may be completed from asset preservation, maybe some from some other sources of funds, but we do have to have your approval, so that's what we're seeking today. They could come from a combination of both of the pools. We've received two pools of fund in different legislative sessions. I guess we're still waiting to see whether there'll be another pool in the upcoming legislative session. And Brian Russell is here with us, so he is the expert on this. So Brian, I'm going to turn this over to you to go through these projects.
Currently, we have about 70 projects that are using asset preservation pools. The largest single user of those funds is Cherry Hall. I think you all have approved that and aware of it. We have a project at the Kentucky Museum. We have basically a 1938 portion of the building, and then we have a newer section. And we had a company, THP Inc., structural engineering firm, has gone over the building, and it's far exceeded what we thought it was going to take to do the outside repairs to keep the building, protect the asset. And it's mainly the roofs are the biggest contributor, and the internal downspouts. Back in the day, they built buildings where basically the downspouts on your house. These are outboard. These are all inside the walls. Well, this is an older building. Those have deteriorated. The I'm gonna call it the piping that goes out is now clogged up and can't get water out of the system. So we're getting wetness inside the building. We need to protect the plant. So our first project is they've given us a tiered list of items. So we're going from $2 million of approval that you've already given us to up to $5 million. But we're going to just work with the $2 million that we've already allocated and we have approved. But we might need to get a little bit more as funds become available. So this is seeking authorization only, not intending to spend the full $5 million at this time. The next project is South Campus. During all of the changes that we've done on campus, we are using the South Campus facility more and more and more. There are several projects out there to improve the building. Got another large section of roof, which will complete the academic side. But this is to continue to support the Conte Health and Human Services and other operations that we feel may need some assistance from asset preservation funds to get it done. So this again is asking and seeking for your authorization to spend AP funds when they're available. Next project is the renovation of IEB. IEB is one of our older buildings on campus, and we have done some work inside the building to make improvements. We've installed a new elevator, we've done some floor leveling. We've made some improvements, but we basically have a downstairs and an outside area that really needs some improvements. We do have water infiltration that comes in, and as part of our due diligence to continue to improve our facilities, we're asking up to the 2.5. And as we move forward, we'll figure what we actually need to make those improvements. Again, seeking authorization only to use AP funds.
Questions of Brian or Susan? Pretty straightforward, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. If not, I'd entertain a motion for approval of the asset preservation pool capital project.
Motion.
Second. Motion by Regent Hill, second by Regent Dennison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Last but not least, our internal auditor, Bruce Wiseman.
Mr. Chair, buddy. Just got a standard quarterly update for you all today. There's a few more slides because it does include year-end activity, just like Susan presented for the financials. We have a recap of our activity as well. Start by recapping the fiscal year 25 audit plan. So you can see we had 9 projects in total. We completed 3. 3 were in progress at the end of the year at June 30th, and 3 were not started. So you might ask, how did we get to that part of the year and not complete our audit plan? The first reason, I think, is we were a little more ambitious than we could execute on. Part of that is this was our second audit plan since I've been here. We've been off more than we could achieve. The second part is we lost between 400 and 500 hours of audit work due to personal leave that we didn't anticipate during the year. So that equates to 1 or 2 projects not getting done. So a couple of things causing these results that I'll put out there for your consideration. We're back to being full force for FY26 and look forward to moving forward with the FY26 plan. Speaking of that, you'll see we've reduced the number of projects we're aiming to complete. We've got 6 on the list. We've already completed 1, the President's T&E audit for this year. If you recall, we do this audit every year. It's governed by the terms of the contract with the President that the board will look at his travel and entertainment expenses through an audit, and we do that on your behalf. I'm happy to report we had no findings again this year. And I would say most importantly, we found an environment of doing the right thing with the President and the entire team processing those transactions on his behalf. So good news from that project so far. We've got 4 projects in progress and then 1 remaining. So we're sitting good for FY26 right now. If you recall from our May meeting when we approved the audit plan, there's a new initiative this year, the Process and System Optimization Work Group. And that's where I'm leading a group of 6 other individuals across campus and looking at systems and processes and are there opportunities to improve them, streamline them, make things more efficient. I'm happy to report we've completed 1 project so far. We looked at computer purchasing guidelines. The idea was that individuals may be purchasing computers that have too much hardware, too much power on them, which then cost too much, and they don't need all that extra stuff in there to complete their job duties. It wasn't a big risk, so we put in a lot of extra controls, but we did make some recommendations on the ITS website of these are the specifications you should look for while you're purchasing a computer. And we also went into the vendor catalogs and removed some of those extra options so it just wasn't so easy for folks to go in and build a supercomputer when they didn't need one. We've got 2 projects in process. And we're getting our footing underneath of us as we're looking at processes and things. And I'll say to the committee and the university community, a large part of this is going to be about change management. How do you go about doing and making changes and making sure you have the right people in the room? And we're learning those lessons every day of making sure that we're including those right people. So as we figure that out, this process will get easier, will get smoother, and I look forward to seeing what we accomplish with this group this year. Sticking with fiscal year 26, where have we spent our time so far? On the left side is our actual time. Our right side is what we plan to do. So far, we're pretty consistent. The big difference is the hotline. We haven't had a lot of hotline activity through October, so our time spent there was less than expected. We used that extra time on audit projects so far. As this was our third audit plan that we've put together, I'm expecting to see our plan time and our actual time be closer as we're getting better at estimating where we're going to be spending the time. This next slide is about follow-up. So after we issue an audit report, that includes recommendations and action items for management that they're going to do. And I tell everyone when we finish an audit, I'm sorry, that doesn't mean we're done. We're going to come back 3 months from now and continue coming back every quarter just to check on your action items. And the internal audit standards say we need to make sure that either the risk is mitigated or that management accept the risk that we identified in the audit report. So right now we have 8 open audit items. And the key thing that that you all should pay attention to is on the right side of the screen, is how long they've been sitting out and open and how long management is working on them. All of those are outstanding less than 90 days. I don't have any concerns to bring to you at this time. As we continue to work through the plan this year and we finish more projects and issue more reports, the number of open items will go up. As management implements them, they will go down. Looking at the hotline, we'll recap fiscal year 25 first. We had 10 reports come in. We completed 8 of those during the year, and 2 were in progress as of June 30th of this year. For comparison's sake, in fiscal year 24, we also had 10 reports, so the hotline activities remained fairly consistent in those 2 fiscal years. Moving on to fiscal year 26, we've gotten 2 reports so far this year. You add those to the 2 we carried over from last year. So we've closed 3 of those, and we have 1 that's right now that we're working. There's no risk related to that hotline report that I think the board needs to be aware of at this time. If that changes, we'll let you know. A reminder to the university community that's here or watching online, if you see something, say something. You can reach out to me directly or to the ethics hotline, which is 100% anonymous. In our recent meetings, we've been talking about the internal audit professional standards and how they were updated in January of 2025. And we've talked about Principle 6 and Principle 7 up here about the responsibilities of the board. And we've got 1 principle left, and I want to touch on that with you all today, and that's the overseen by the board. Principle 8.1 talks about board interactions, and that's just making sure from the internal audit standards that I'm communicating with you all. We accomplish that in a few ways. Number 1 are these quarterly updates. We have this formal method of communication. In addition to that, I'm communicating offline with Chair Brody in between something pops up in between meetings. So I feel like we're sitting in a good spot there. Principle 8.2 talks about resources. You, the Finance, Budget, and Audit Committee, are responsible for ensuring we have the proper resources to do our work, complete our mission, and internal audit. I would like to thank you all. That has been a priority. You are constantly asking me, do we have everything we need? Thank you for asking. I feel like we're properly resourced for what we're doing, and you can see the activities that we're doing with those resources. Principle 8.3 is overseeing the quality of our work. So how do we do that? Again, it's these meetings. We're talking about the fiscal year 25 audit plan. What projects have we done? What projects are in process? We're going to talk a little bit about consultations. How much of those? How many of those have we done? Committee work that we've done. I try to provide you the information you need during these meetings to help assess the quality that we're doing, and so you can measure how effective and how efficient we're being. Finally, principal 8.4, the external quality assessment, that's the external review we did last summer. The standards say that the audit committee needs to be involved, and we included Chair Brody in that process, made sure that our plan of what we were going to do was aligned with his expectations. So I think we've checked the box on all four of these requirements in principle number 8. And that wraps up, from the internal audit standards perspective, the responsibilities of the board. If you all have questions or want to dive deeper into those, there's a whole lot more technical reading that's in there than just two PowerPoint slides. And I'm happy to talk internal audit sometime if you would so choose. We just talked about the external review, the quality assessment review. I want to provide you an update to be transparent with that. This slide looks like it just did in May. We have not done any work since May on implementing the action plans from that review. We've been focused on completing the audit projects and that type of work. We have a goal for FY26 that all of these items be completed and implemented, so we'll continue to update you all about those in future meetings. What else are we doing? The internal audit standards require that I confirm two things to the audit committee every year. Number one is that we are independent through the organization. And that means that we are reporting directly to you, the audit committee, with a dotted line to the president. That's best practice. And I'm here to confirm that. That's how we're operating. Number two is that we conform with the professional standards. Again, I can say that because of the external review we did last summer. It's perfectly fine that we are working on those action items, and we're going to complete those this year. And then as a third point, I will call out, when we finish our action items for that external review, we're going to do a gap assessment with the new internal audit standards and make sure we're conforming with all of those that are new, that have changed, that we're hitting those highlights as well. Consultations, we completed 49 of those last year. That's where someone from the university reached out to us, asked us a question, wanted to get our opinion on something. We didn't hit our goal. Our goal was 50, so we came up one short, and we're gonna hit our goal next year, still set at 50. So far, we've got 14. We're on track for that goal. Policy review, just as an update, one of the advisory services that we've provided is we led a group of folks that looked at our employee relocation policy. So imagine you're hiring a new employee. They need to move to the area. You want to help offset some of their moving expenses or house hunting expenses. We looked at this policy, and we did two things. We gave departments and the new employees more flexibility in how we support that, how we provide those funds, how we provide an allowance or a reimbursement. And second, we streamlined the administrative procedures on the back end, of how much paper we're pushing around back and forth to make those payments happen. I think it was a very collaborative effort, and wanted to call that out for the committee to know. Last slide, professional development. It's very important in the internal audit standards. It's very important to me that our office stay up to date with what's happening in our industry. The first bullet point, we attend a meeting every year at the University of Kentucky with the other internal audit teams from the state that allows us to see the risks that they're seeing, how they're handling them, how they're interacting with their stakeholders at their universities. A very helpful day for sure. Second, we attended the National Conference for the Association of College and University Auditors. Again, another conference where we get most of our professional development tailored exactly to what we do every day. There we presented a presentation called Leadership Good to Great. If you've read Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, we took his concepts and illustrated them using the history of the Dallas Cowboys to make it a little bit more fun for those in attendance. If that sounds appealing to you all, I invite you all to Professional Development Day, where we'll be doing the presentation again. Finally, I've got a list of committees that we are participating in on campus. Again, that's part of the advisory service role that we provide to provide feedback as committees are doing their work. I know that was a lot. Trying to get through it quick. Are there any questions I can answer for you?
So, go back one slide.
Yep.
From your perspective, as a representative of the board, give us your description of the RAMP Budget Model Steering Committee and what you're seeing there and your participation.
Sure. So I believe we had our third meeting yesterday, and we've got some recommendations from Huron who came in to initial review, and we're looking at those recommendations to prioritize which ones we want to work on at our next meeting. So far, I think that committee is doing what it's supposed to be doing, looking at the RAMP budget model and steering it where it needs to go, looking at what improvements we can make to the model, where the model's working well, and that's what we're doing.
I just say for the record, I'd like to state too that I meet at least quarterly in person with Bruce, and as part of the evaluation process, we talked about the number of audits for that happened or didn't happen in 25 and are going to happen in 26, and I am totally comfortable with that situation. So, but any other questions, Bruce?
Just another one. So we talked about, as you attest to the independence, as you, and the number of consultations speaks to this, but as you go out to campus and you ask for information, how does campus receive you? Various offices, are they receptive to you coming in? Are they compliant? Understand your role?
They do. I would say I've got a great working relationship with every area on campus. I've not encountered any hurdles from WKU employees. They've been very open and forthcoming. I'd say we have very frank conversations. We're not afraid to ask a question of why certain things happen to help get that understanding. And I think that's what, when we're working with folks around campus, they really value that we're trying to understand why and how something works before we come in and just talk about what a best practice might look like. So far, everyone on campus has been great to work with and open and helping us find the information that we need to find to do our work.
Bruce, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Madam Chair, that concludes Finance, Budget, and Audit.
Okay, thank you very much. We are going to take a break now, and we will reconvene in about 10 minutes.